is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is a very rainy day, and hopefully the storm is not going to hit us very, very hard. But knowing New Providence and many of the Family Islands, unfortunately, even a little rain will have people underwater. And some persons, unfortunately, are in a position where even a little bit of rain has rain coming into their living room. So we pray for them and hope for the best. But I'm here trying to speak about prostate cancer awareness. This is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. I'm honored to have the esteemed and honorable Bahamian surgical oncologist and general surgeon, Dr. Wesley Francis. Thankfully, he doesn't have a surgical emergency at this moment. Welcome, Dr. Francis.
It's good to be here, as always, and good to be talking to the Bahamas.
I'm glad because there are many times I'm about to go on the air and I hear you have an emergency and I have to talk to myself for an hour. But I'm glad I don't have to do that today. I appreciate it. So we're going to talk about positive things. When men in this country in particular hear prostate cancer, they think everything is dreary. They have fear. There's a lot of misconceptions and everything else. But the number one is the dreaded digital rectal exam. Let's get that out of the window. So I'll start with a slogan that's really been very popular in the United Kingdom, in Great Britain, in the last 2 years in particular, and that was brought up by the British Association of Urological Surgeons and aligning themselves with Prostate Cancer UK, United Kingdom, in declaring that men do not need, quote unquote, a finger up the bum to test for prostate cancer So screening, first line screening, as the American Urology Association has said in its outline and its guidelines that tell every urologist how we're supposed to do screening, there is no role for first line screening from the dreaded digital rectal exam. The same thing from the Urology Association in Europe, from the German Urological Association. So basically there's a consensus in every governing body throughout the world, even the Canadian Urological Association, there's no role for first-line screening. So there are a lot of misconceptions in regards to digital rectal exam. First thing, I'll just speak common sense. We're trying to pick up prostate cancer when the prostate feels completely normal. If we do the digital rectal exam and we're trying to pick up early prostate cancer, it's going to feel smooth without any nodules and no issues whatsoever.
So Greg, you know, this is something that always happens because we talk about the same thing in breast cancer. Clinical examination, right? Breast exam. By the time you are picking up anything in the breast that you can palpate or the patient can palpate, it's perhaps already at an advanced stage.
Exactly.
So,
and that's
so,
why, for example, in breast cancer, you'll just do routine mammograms.
Because you want to catch it before it manifests itself, it becomes a cancer.
You don't wait to feel something in breast and then go for a mammogram. We're doing annual mammograms to pick it up before you can feel it. Exactly the same thought process.
But in our population, and I think in underserved areas, and not that I am advocating the digital rectal, I am certainly not. I don't want a digital rectal if I don't have to have it, right? But I think people need to understand what is screening. And so maybe we could talk about screening for cancer in general and then specifically for prostate cancer, because the term you just use is first line. So what's first line screening for, first of all, what is screening, and then what's first line screening for prostate?
So when we talk about first line, we're talking about persons who are not coming specifically to a urologist. They're not coming to their physician complaining about any lower urinary tract symptoms or anything that may suggest any prostate issues whatsoever. They're just coming for an annual physical, and we're just getting a baseline in terms of if it's the first time when you're 40 years old.
Essentially unaffected
people. Unaffected persons, right. Asymptomatic persons.
Asymptomatic, yes. Unaffected.
Yes.
Screening a population that has no disease.
Yes.
Essentially.
So we're not doing the test with the anticipation of picking up prostate cancer. We're just doing a screening test to try to capture those who unknowingly have prostate cancer. And cancer for the prostate is very is different than many other cancers because there are little to no symptoms until it has progressed to a certain stage. So if we're waiting for symptoms, we're waiting till it's too late. So we don't want to have to wait till, all right, someone's having back pain and they're nauseous and they have kidney dysfunction because of obstruction of their kidneys. We're not waiting for any signs whatsoever.
So we're speaking to men out there who are totally normal.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So the population that we're interested in is people without disease.
Yes.
That's what screening is about.
Yes.
Okay. So what's first line now in prostate?
So that is where we're trying to stratify persons. For PSA, it's an easy test to get. It's a relatively inexpensive test. It's a non-invasive in terms of you're going to get blood tests.
So
anyway.
When should I start screening?
Every year from the age of 40.
40 years
and
old.
And every year after that, at least until the age of 70. And I would advocate even to the age of 75.
So at age 40, I'm a man in this country. At age 40, I should start screening for prostate.
Well, you should be getting your annual physicals all those years anyway.
Well, absolutely.
And your physician won't even have to ask you. Automatically, they'll say you're 40, all right. They're going to tick
this
the box.
This is what we're going to do. Okay.
For a PSA, yes.
So PSA at age 40, that's first line.
It's automatic, yes. It's automatic.
Well, they have to select it, right? So
well, every physician does, and it's covered by NHI, and it's covered by every insurance in terms of your annual physical.
Let's say that again. So PSA is covered by NHI.
It's free of cost.
So that means every male resident in the Bahamas has access to a PSA, essentially.
For free.
Somebody's paying for it, right?
Yes.
But every male in the Bahamas at the age of 40 can have an access to screening for prostate cancer first line with a PSA.
Correct.
And the entire Bahamas just heard that.
And we're also we're not telling men that they should start getting annual physicals at 40 as well.
They
should be getting it from their teens.
So essentially, access is not a problem in the Bahamas. Let's state that.
The problem is fare. Well, too many men live in ignorance.
So it's available.
It's available. But men are fare.
Men don't want to go get it.
Because of the connotation of what they've seen from generation past.
Maybe we need to speak to the women.
I always do. And a lot of times it's women who drag the men in their life to get the screening.
Right.
But
right.
A lot of young boys are being traumatized. It's post-traumatic where they saw their grandfather, they saw their uncle when they were 8 years old, when they were 12 years old, when they were 16 years old, dying of horrible death from prostate cancer.
Well, this is education.
Yeah.
If they understand that, they understand that that's the cause and how to prevent that, then they would want to, right?
Well,
so is there an education gap then? Are we not educating them as to why the grandfather or father died and suffered needlessly?
Well, it's not as simple as that. We're talking about maybe even going back into the 80s where there was no PSA. PSA came about in the early 90s. So 40 to 60% of men who present with prostate cancer were already at a metastatic or advanced stage. So everything has changed drastically to the point now that we can pick up prostate cancer where it's clinically insignificant.
So in 2025, there is complete full access for every male over the age of 40 in this country, accessed by government, accessed by private insurance to get a PSA.
Yes.
And totally available.
And PSA, we also have to put a little notation next to it, is not diagnostic of prostate cancer.
Okay, but it's the first line.
It's the first line. Then there are other more specific tests that might incur a little bit more expense and give us more.
So let's educate a little bit now. So when we talk about a screening test, we talk about someone without disease, and you want a screening test that'll be able to pick up someone who is asymptomatic.
Correct.
So we speak about sensitivity.
Yes.
Right? How sensitive is this disease? Sorry, how sensitive is this test to be able to pick up the disease in someone who is asymptomatic? So where does PSA lie there?
It has very poor sensitivity and specificity when you look at other tests. But what it is it's a gateway for us to look to do more. And so it can be elevated for infection of the prostate. It can be elevated for inflammation of the prostate.
But if it's elevated, I could get more tests.
Correct. If you're not emptying your bladder, if I put a clothespin on your penis and you don't pee till tomorrow, your PSA could be 25 based on the fact that you're in retention.
Clothespin is not a good idea.
Well, it's better than the clamp. Or I inject some bacteria into your prostate, your PSA can be in the 40s related to that infection in itself. You can have a very big prostate,
right,
and that big benign prostate can contribute PSA. So for someone who has a 150-gram prostate, where a normal-sized prostate is 20 to 25 grams, their normal PSA might be 12. Okay. It might be 9.
So even though I have a low sensitivity with PSA, I still should get it.
Yeah, and then we can do, even also available through NHI, we can get a free PSA, which tells you the amount of unbound PSA in your bloodstream. First of all, PSA should not be available in your blood. PSA is produced by the prostate epithelial cells. It leaks into the bloodstream in small little quantities. So if you look in the ejaculate, your PSA can be in the 100,000.
But nobody's measuring PSA in the ejaculate.
Yeah,
right?
I'm just saying that it's not supposed to be in the bloodstream. But when it is, let's say for a 40 to 45-year-old, you don't want your PSA to be more than 0.5, 0.6.
0.5.
Okay. When you get to 65, your PSA shouldn't be more than 2, 2.5. But then you have to put it in terms of what else can cause a PSA be elevated. That's where we use PSA density. So for every gram of prostate, how much PSA is there being contributed? So we'll look at a PSA density for a younger man, less than 50, you don't want to be more than 0.1. If it's an older man, the threshold would be 0.15. You look at PSA velocity. That's why I always talk about, you don't want to look at the PSA just in isolation. So you look at 1 year to the next. That's why it's important never to miss doing your PSAs for 3-4 years, because in those intervening years, you can have prostate cancer quickly come on, and then by the time you check for it, it's already advanced.
So you're looking at the trends?
Trend, yes.
Okay.
PSA velocity, we can use PSA density. If your PSA is on the high side, we can determine statistically if you have likely to have clinically significant prostate cancer by the amount of free. So we look at the free to total ratio or the percentage free PSA that's available.
So every young man, 40 years and old, should, as they grow older, should be able to plot each PSA, every year. Is that what you're advocating?
Because we're at higher risk.
Yeah.
Because we have so much in the way of non-communicable disease. I would say every man at the age of 40, if I were to ask him, what's your PSA?
They should know
What's your HbA1c?
And you should know it.
And you should understand what that means. And then you ask, what was your PSA? If you're 42, what was your PSA at 41? What was your HbA1c at 41? That determines your likelihood of having diabetes or prediabetes. And on that train of thought, diabetes can be more devastating than prostate cancer. Prostate cancer is a relatively innocuous disease. Of all cancers, probably, if anyone wanted to choose a prostate cancer, a cancer to have it, you should have prostate cancer. Probably obviously, there are very aggressive forms of disease, but an estimated 80 to 85% of prostate cancers are very slow-growing, almost indolent disease.
But what we need to do is that we see, though, right? I mean,
well,
people of African ancestry, people in the Bahamas, people that you see every day.
Still, I would say maybe 20, 25% are aggressive. The other ones are relatively slow-growing, but it's a fact.
That's good to know.
Yes. But we need to figure out with testing, with screening, and that's where in the last 10 years or even less, we have so many advances in terms of looking at liquid biopsies. So liquid biopsies is not some science fiction. We can look for DNA fragments. We can look for cancer cells. And that can determine, so, for example, for prostate cancer, we can, in the blood, determine that you're going to have prostate cancer in 3.5 years to 4 years or 5 years, long before any imaging or any other routine blood test.
Let's go back. I'm 40. Mm-hmm. I got my annual physical. My doctor got my, checked my PSA. It's elevated. What next?
Well, with anything, you always repeat it.
Okay.
You don't expect there to be lab error, but because there's so many things.
So repeat it in a month's time, months' time.
I would say at least a month because you need 5 half-lives of PSA to go by.
It's elevated.
And that's five days, so it's at least 25 days.
I'm 2 months in, my second PSA now.
So even at that time before, we try to determine what potentially can be the cause of that. Are you emptying your bladder? We can do an ultrasound and we can do a post-mic residual to see if it's significant. We'll do a urine culture to determine is there likelihood of there being a urinary tract infection or prostatitis. So a lot of prostatitis is abacterial. There is no actual bacteria. And it can be difficult to treat.
So does my insurance pay then for that second PSA? Does NHI cover the second PSA?
It does.
So it's not an access issue. So I can get my second PSA.
Yes, because... Why? Because it's going to save the government and the taxpayers a lot more money than going for biopsies.
They don't always think about that. So I get my second PSA and it's elevated. What do I do then?
Then
I get referred to you?
Correct.
Okay.
Or any other urologist.
Referral to a urologist. So what am I looking now when I get my second PSA? It's elevated. I'm 40 years old. What's going to happen to me next?
So then we do a thorough history. We want to determine, do you have any first-degree relatives who've had prostate cancer?
Father, all of them.
Well, almost everybody grandfather is going to have prostate cancer.
Well,
if you live to 80,
I'm
talking about those who were diagnosed before the age of 50, which will put you at a particularly high risk. So if you have two first-degree relatives who've had prostate cancer before the age of 50,
then say I'm lucky and I have no first-degree relatives with prostate cancer, even though that may be impossible.
So then automatically what the lab will do, even before it gets to me, is we do a free to total ratio. So you know, not just get a total PSA, you get a free PSA. And then we look at the free to total.
So is that a third test?
No. Well, when we're repeating the PSA, we'll automatically do a free as well. So that's within the same sample. We just look at the free as well as the total.
Okay.
And then we look at the percentage. Based on that percentage, the more free you have, the more unbound, that's not bound to protein, that's floating around, that's a better prognosis. You're less likely to have prostate cancer.
But that doesn't mean much to me at that point.
So
my doctor needs to know that.
Exactly that.
Okay.
So if it's above 24%, then your chance of having prostate cancer may be less than 8, 10%.
So you would tell me then, because my doctor would refer me to you, you will tell me then that if my free PSA is less than 24%, whatever, then I'm okay. You do nothing with me?
You have to look at many things. You don't just look at one thing. So statistically speaking, it's less likely. So we're feeling more reassured.
Right.
But then the next thing we do is, which is automatic, you do an MRI. MRI of your prostate.
Now, okay, I'm a guy working, I'm a construction worker. I get my PSA because NHI is paying for that. And now I come to you after my second PSA elevated and I go get an MRI. You tell me this MRI costs, what, $600, $700? I don't know how much it costs.
Some place you can get it for $550, yes.
$550 is the lowest.
Yes.
Okay, I don't have it. What happens?
Well, that's where the dilemma comes in. That's where sometimes we have to go to social services. Sometimes there are charities that reach out to me all the time and tell me, find individuals that can benefit from our help. And there being a lot of, even this recently with this Charney thing that they're having at through Fusion, they said, and identify persons who need help in terms of prostate cancer screening or treatment. If they do not have the funds, reach out to us. We'll use some of the funds that we got through this venture to help. And there are a lot of other individuals.
If I can't afford an MRI, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just, if I can't afford it, I mean, we'd like, it's a luxury item. It shouldn't be. But if I can't afford an MRI, what do I do?
A lot of these institutions also have payment plans. We also have, I know many persons who are very generous and are charitable.
Fellas say, brother, yeah. I broke. I can't afford it.
If you really
need a lot of patients like that,
if you really need
that way, right?
There are a lot of people.
We're talking to the average Joe on the road.
We have a lot. There are a lot of persons out there are very blessed and have great hearts. And I have, in a typical year, I might get 30 MRIs done for free for patients through charitable organizations.
Okay. But I can't find nobody who could charitably.
Well, it's not for them to do it. It's for me. And that's why I always try to network, and I always try to.
But brother, I can't afford an MRI. Ain't nobody giving me no MRI. I'm just a regular fella. I mean, I ain't even got no job, but I had access to NHI, and I was able to go. I'm following everything Dr. Pinto and Dr. Francis say on the radio, and I go and get my free access to my annual.
Well, that brings up the topic that I've been fighting for a decade, and you and I have spoken many times. The public system need an MRI, not just for urology, not just for vascular, not just for cardiology, not for neurology.
I agree.
We need an MRI, and it's not even negotiable or debatable.
I'm sure all the powers that be are listening to us, but I'm still regular Joe. I'm broke. I ain't got no money. I need my
Social services provides.
Man, the line in social services is long.
Okay.
What you gonna do for me? I broke. I ain't got. What's happening? What you gonna do for me? I ain't got no MRI. I can't get my MRI.
Unfortunately, that's the best we can do because.
So am I stuck at that point?
We can put you through biopsies, but unfortunately, biopsies are not the most pleasant experience, particularly through the public system where we don't have the resources to either sedate you or give you general anesthesia. There's always going to be an inherent risk of infection as well. There's going to be inherent risk of bleeding after the prostate biopsies. There's going to be inherent risk of having hematuria, blood in your ejaculate and semen, which is horrifying to any man. And that can happen for even months after. So we need to, and not only that.
So there's no other way for me?
MRI is the gold standard.
I understand the gold standard.
Well, you know what? The powers of being better get an MRI for a million reasons. Even for persons who have stroke, you need an MRI. For every cancer patient, Dr. Curling has been here, they need an MRI. It's not negotiable. They'll save money on the back end. Even if we're looking, taking about the human toll out of it, the death, the morbidity, it'll save money on the back end.
So my access then stops at the MRI?
No. There are means and there are ways. So in the most difficult of circumstances, I can maneuver and find you an MRI. Trust me, I've done it so many times.
But I'm not going to be referred to you all the time, though.
My colleagues are also gone through this rigmarole, and they know what they have to do to get the best care for the patient. So there are means and there are ways, and we're not going to just give up on somebody.
All right. You know, some generous guy heard this story, and they donated all these MRIs through some program. I got my MRI now, and my MRI shows a little spot on the prostate. What next for me?
So it's a scoring system. It's called PI-RADS. So you and I both are surgeons, and we also realize that how important it is for imaging to be accurate. And we have a wonderful radiologist. There's been numerous behemoth, very well-trained radiologists who have come back.
Yes, I must admit, we got
and
good radiologists.
I mean, I would have said 20 years ago there might have been one. Now there might be 10.
I mean, I think radiology is mostly in the private sector and in the public sector too. I mean, for what they have to read, they're very good.
Yes.
They're very good.
But you and I
accurate,
both,
right.
We don't do anything unless we ourselves look at the imaging. So we need to.
That's a part of our training.
Exactly
right?
That. So we don't base anything on a report. I'll never do anything on a report. So in many respects, for MRI of your prostate, for CT scans of your kidneys, I'm just as good as any radiologist because that's what I had to do, bread and butter, to pass my exams. I was given MRI of prostates to read. If I got it wrong, I wouldn't have gone to become
a
consultant.
I think
more I do, it's a skill.
I think respectfully, the radiologist is better than you and I.
I don't know.
They do that every day. Let's just give that to them.
Okay, I'm almost there.
Okay.
So then we get a PI-RADS score.
Okay,
a PI-RADS score of 1 A pyrite score of 2 means that the chance of there being clinically significant prostate cancer is very small.
It's so what not do you mean by exact, what? Because you know we talking to the average Joe there. What do you mean by clinically significant
prostate cancer that we need to be aware of and that we may need to treat?
So that's that. Does that mean then that I can have prostate cancer that doesn't need to be treated?
If putting it in perspective,
you say clinically significant, right?
Yeah. You and I almost certainly have prostate cancer. Everybody that we just passed, everybody has prostate cancer. If you live to a certain age, everybody has prostate. There was a study that looked at a large number of men who died tragically,
right?
Car accidents, gun violence, etc., from the age of 40 to 45.
True, right.
And 20% of them had prostate cancer at the age of 40.
Autopsy series also show prostate cancer.
So that's why, at the age of 70, everywhere in the world, they stopped doing PSAs, because if you look for prostate cancer, you are going to find it. And then when you look at an MRI, you're looking for every little small lesion, you're going to find something almost certainly in a whole lot of men, and it's not going to be of any consequence. All you're going to do is change their mindset and say, you actually have a cancer, and now they have dread and gloom. But the good news is prostate cancer is a very survivable disease.
Right.
The 10-year survival is 97-98 for early local disease. So very few cancers you can say that. 5-year survival is 100% for early disease.
Right. So this is the purpose then of screening then, right?
Correct.
If you find this and it's early at the point where it's localized and hopefully it's the non-aggressive type, you would have biopsied, you would have determined all of that. What's my next course?
So depending on what the pyrite score shows in your MRI, right, it'll tell you there's a lesion. If the lesion is 4 or 5, then the chance of there being prostate cancer is highly suspected. If it's 3, it's called equivocal. You look at other factors to determine whether you look at your PSA density, PSA.
Average Joe, my doctor's supposed to know all of that.
Yes.
And he's supposed to. So let's say my doctor says it's pyrite score. I mean, I need a biopsy now.
That means that we're automatically going to do 12 biopsies, looking at an average is like 5 millimeters between each biopsy. And we're looking at there's a left lobe of the prostate, there's a right lobe of the prostate.
Right.
We're going to take 2 biopsies from the apex, 2 biopsies from the mid zone, 2 from the base, and usually we'll even take 2 from the periphery.
Am I sleeping when you do this, or am I awake?
For me, I always treat people as I would treat my own family and treat myself. I would never do it for someone who, if I have the means to sedate them or put them to sleep, I will do it.
But I don't have the means. So what happened to that?
Well, it's not the most pleasant experience.
But it has to be done.
Yeah. It has to be done. So even if we can get a little bit of conscious sedation, we'll do it.
Okay.
And it's not so bad.
And is this available? So what is my access now to be biopsied? Like, is that readily available in the public sector as it is in the private sector?
The public system is overwhelmed.
I can't get an MRI, and then I can't get my biopsy.
That's why
a problem.
It is a problem, and I've been hitting my head against the wall, and the frustration goes beyond words. But yes, so even in terms of, we had an ultrasound machine for urology at PMH alone, but that had an issue. The ultrasound machines at PMH are so overwhelmed that you might have to wait 4 months just to get an appointment to get so for them to land us the ultrasound machine from the radiology department, they just can't. They have actually written and said, we just don't have the ability to lend you the machine even for an hour every week or every other week.
So let's say for some reason it works out.
Yes.
A lot of things work out in PMH, right? No matter the limited resources, we manage to get things done. We work miracles in the place. And I get my biopsy. It's a pyrite. Well, for some reason, I got the MRI. Someone donated. I get my biopsy. It's definitely prostate cancer.
You're jumping a step.
What's that step?
In the public system, how long are you going to wait for that pathology? Because they're overwhelmed.
Well, we got some new pathologists now.
You're going to wait 6-8 weeks.
Progress, though.
Yeah.
But I mean, you said prostate cancer is indolent, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Six weeks, I could wait.
You can wait in most cases because it's rare that you're going to have very
good.
But you also have to look at the psyche of the man waiting those 6 or 8 weeks, which can be a living torture.
Understood. But yes. we got to work with what we have, right?
Okay.
And while we always hope to improve, what we have is what we have, and we got to work with it, within it, right? So I'm now waiting. I got my pathology results. It is prostate. Is there any sort of risk stratification now to say I am low risk, high risk, or, you know, you can watch me, or that, you have to do something for me?
So what I do if the person has means or they have insurance is what I've been doing for the last 2 years.
I don't have insurance, man.
Well, let me tell you what the future of urology is. We do gene sequencing, gene testing, genomic testing on the actual biopsies that can stratify a person in terms of, is that disease aggressive? Does it need treatment right now?
Dr. Pinto, I'm in the Bahamas. I'm 2025. I barely could get my MRI. Somebody donated it for me, right? I managed to get my biopsy, right?
Okay. So what I want to do right now
is... The pathologist waited 12 weeks to give me my results back.
I want to talk about...
Help me now.
I want to talk about what is hopefully going to be the future in a decade, in even the public system.
But what I want to know, what about now? So, how do you treat me now?
So we're going to stratify you based on your PSA.
Okay.
Less than 10, and we look at PSA density, then we'll talk to you about just from that PSA is low risk. 10 to 20 is intermediate risk. Above 20 is high risk. We look at your pathology in terms of your actual tissue diagnosis. Gleason, it's a Gleason score. So the WHO actually... I think it was in 2010, 12, they actually have a grading system. So you talk about grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, grade 4, grade 5. But the Gleason is the lowest, earliest form of prostate cancer pathologically is Gleason 6 out of 10. And even some pathologists, even some urologists say that 6 out of 10 is so common. Is it really, in fact, prostate cancer? So if you have 6 out of 10, your chance of having metastatic disease is almost zero. Your chance of it being very aggressive is a lot less than it if you have Gleason 7, 8, 9, or 10 out of 10.
Okay.
So depending on that, then you also determine how many of those cores are positive, what percentage of each of those cores is positive, and where are the cores that are positive coming from? Is it all localized to one lobe, right lobe, or left lobe, or is it in both lobes? Obviously, you have a worse prognosis or need to be more aggressive in management if it's invading both lobes.
So stratify me with the means that you have, not the genomic test. Because I mean, I understand a genomic test. That's a pie in the sky. That's next 10 years, right? But right now, I'm low risk. What am I getting?
Before we can determine that, you can't determine that just based on tissue diagnosis. You cannot determine that just based on PSA. We need to do actual full body screening to determine whether there's any lymph node involvement, determine whether there's any metastatic involvement.
CAT scan? What are we doing now?
CAT scan is
PET
not...
scan, PSMA.
PSMA PET CT scan is the gold standard. But is that available? Right. No, we're working towards
we're
that.
Working on that
yeah, we're working on that as well. Or what's available at... It's not the ultimate, but it's actually garners very useful, good information, is to do a full body diffusion scan, which is available at Doctor's Hospital.
This is another MRI.
Yes.
So I get two MRIs though.
Correct.
Wow.
And you need to get a bone scan. Because even if you think the disease is localized.
We're working on a bone scan too. That's coming soon, right?
Yes, yes.
So I need two MRIs and I need a bone scan.
You need an MRI. Okay, you get a PSA. The PSA is abnormal. You need an MRI. If the MRI warrants it, we do a biopsy. You're doing targeted biopsies. So pathology provides a diagnosis in terms of prostate cancer. We need to do a full body screen, including a bone scan and ideally a PSMA PET CT scan to determine whether it's localized disease. If it's local disease...
I hope people are listening, right? Because you and I, we're having this back and forth, and I think we're doing it in a playful kind of way, hopefully educate people. But you see how difficult it is and all that's needed to be done, the cost associated with all of this.
And prostate cancer is the number one cancer in this country.
It's number one. It's way more than breast cancer. People don't realize that.
It's the number one cancer killer in this country. Over 100 men are dying... needlessly of this disease. So if there's anything, I'm not going to criticize anyone. Instead of doing a road project in a small community for something, let's save 100 men a year.
They got potholes in that road, man. Come on.
Well, I think it's more of a cost to our society to see 100 men dying needlessly.
I'm just joking.
Yeah.
Right. I agree with you.
We have a call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Yes, good good afternoon. I mean, good evening, Dr. Pinto.
How are you doing?
Yeah, this is Dr. Curling Francis, right?
No, this is Wesley Francis.
Oh, sorry, because I know Dr. Curling was an oncologist. Sorry, because he dealt with my mom.
Yes.
Yeah, she had colon cancer. But, you know, I'm always reading, so I'm deep into virology as a lay, right, and genetics. So I just want Dr. Pinto and to spare me some reading here, right, and clear up some things for me and the public at the same time. Because, you know, it's amazing that you guys are disclosing these statistics, which is quite frightening, right? So I got a joke for Dr. Pinto. I was listening this morning. I didn't get a chance to call in. So I guess you scared of Dwight when you told him that if he lived to see 75 or 80, basically people would get prostate cancer. Dwight would seem to be taken aback by that, right?
Correct.
It kind of frightened him, you know?
Yes.
But I wanted to touch on the testosterone and the dehydrated testosterone, right?
Yes.
And then I've been reading, they say, but the more you exercise, you increase that helps maintain or increase testosterone levels, right?
Correct.
And I remember when I was in the hospital and I was having this conversation, and me being very naive, you know, I was so frightened by BPH and the bloody TERP and all that. I said, "By Dr. Pinto, I want you to take out my testicles." And you said,
"Correct." Let me ask you a question. Didn't you have a child after that?
I had two after that.
Okay, all right.
So I owe you, right?
Oh, you need to name one of them after me then.
Well, I wish I did.
Okay.
But you see him, you know, you realize, I had actually told you that one time I was up there, but, you know, Dr. Pinto, it's like, I was doing the PSA from, like, I was about 47, 48. So, but, you know, the thing is, let me get this person, this testosterone the imbalance, you guys normally, you test for testosterone, right?
Correct.
Do you do the other for the dehydrated testosterone?
In select patients, yes, because that's a more expensive test that might not always be readily paid for by insurance, and definitely is not paid for. It is relatively expensive, and in the public system, even testosterone, either free or total testosterone, has to be paid by the patient.
All right, so the question to me then is the disparity in these levels that determines the BPH? I'm trying to find it because...
Exactly that. So that's why when you want to reduce the size of your prostate, you actually want to block off the dihydrotestosterone. Enzyme 5-alpha reductase inhibitor, which is widely known as
Avodart or finasteride. I that now. Yes. And so that's the culprit. And so another thing for me is as I. Talk to you. You mentioned, but I just wanted to.
So you are on Avodart at this moment.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think we've had this conversation. If you're on Avodart, what does that mean about your PSA? That means that it's artificially halved, and if for any PSA to be a useful screening tool, you need to double that PSA. So if you've been on Avodart for more than 6 months, or finasteride for more than 6 months, your PSA is artificially halved. So a PSA of 2 is actually 4, a PSA of 3 is actually 6.
But thanks for reminding me, because I know you had said that before. So what I do is, when time to take the test, I wouldn't take it.
Oh, boy.
You know, so I didn't want to tell you that. I do it intermittently, because you explained to me with the hormone levels and the sexual drive. But, you know, I still have that drive. Thanks, God, I'm alive. But I'm trying to be a little humorous there. But as it relates to the mRNA test.
MRI, yes.
The mRNA test to show cancer, how efficacious is that?
It is. It's actually the gold standard in terms of screening, in terms of surveillance, in terms of even staging. MRI, magnetic resonance imaging, that doesn't involve radiation, is the gold standard. That, along with a PSMA PET CT scan, which unfortunately requires a nuclear reagent, which is expensive to produce, and it only has a half-life of about 2 days. So if you make it, and it's expensive to make, you need to have patients in high volumes to use it while it's still good.
Yeah, but I learned a little bit from radiation chemistry. Some have half-life, and then some have a half-life of 1,000 years, et cetera. I've seen a little bit. But as it relates to the biopsy, from my human standpoint, I remember in having a conversation with you, there is a disparity in the way it's done in the public hospital versus the private hospital. So I want to apologize to the public for frightening them out, because... For me, I found that I wasn't given any anesthetics. And so that is why I've been crying on the radio saying how painful it was. And then a few friends of mine, they had their own done privately, and they said they was given anesthetics.
Yeah, they didn't even know it happened.
Or drugs to stop the pain. And so and I thought that was ridiculous, because that biopsy is painful without the drugs.
We don't have enough time to get people in with colon cancers and breast cancer in for anesthesia in the public system because of all the violence and trauma and everything else. How are we going to get somebody in to do biopsies when we have to do so many biopsies?
Yeah, I got a joke for you and Dr. Yes. Francis, right? I have an oldest daughter. She's about 26. And I have to have a pill whenever the because I can't go through that like that. And in the hospital, the environment, the aesthetics is sickening. You know, like for me, you know, all roads, I hear them talking about the roads, right, Dr. Pims and Dr. Francis. All roads eventually lead to the hospital. You know?
Yes.
You know, I don't have the money that my parents have. You know, we can air ambulance out of the States and all them things, the Cleveland Clinic, where all these different institutes. I have little children, and so I kind of sacrificing myself for them, really and truly. But I really would like to see the healthcare system emerge into really what it's doing for people because, you know, I'm paying taxes. I'm contributing, and it's really inglorious the way all, you know, the system is, Dr. Pinto, and, you know.
Well, we'll take some of the negative with the positive. Dr. Francis has mentioned, I mentioned before, because of all the violence, because of all the crime, we have a trauma team that can rival any in the world because we see so much trauma. And as I said, Dr. Francis will say, if we didn't have such highly skilled trauma teams, and that's multidisciplinary in terms of surgeons, orthopedics, neurosurgery, ear, nose, and throat, urology, general surgeons, etc., vascular surgeons, the death rate in terms of murder rate per year would probably be another 25 or 30 higher.
But, you know, it's not only trauma. And I like what the caller is saying. We as Bahamians need to put more investment in our own healthcare and invest in our healthcare. We invest in other people's healthcare. We invest in Florida's healthcare system.
Billions of dollars.
It is expensive, but what I'm saying is...
But we don't do it in our own.
Made me thought about something in the fact that, you know, Bahamians are willing to pay for the healthcare once it's accessible at an affordable rate. You know, the government subsidizes a whole lot of things, and they seem to have the money to do all kind of other things and use the taxpayers as the way they see fit. But, I mean...
I'll just say for MRI, if we bought an MRI in the government system, it'll pay for itself in terms of savings, in terms of... in 2 months.
Yeah, but the thing is for me... You explain, yeah, this is the final question here, because I remember this, you know, I read a lot, and so there's an Outlook Science medical book that I had for decades, and I was reading it, and these kind of innovations, they was talking about some stem cells research for diabetes, and then they also mentioned the way cancer spreads through the lymphatic system, and they said some innovation to get rid of the lymphatic, some of the lymph nodes to stop metastasizing. And so I was kind of, it only kind of didn't frighten me this morning when you said it spread to the spine, because I had a friend died from the prostate cancer that actually metastasized to his spinal region, all his bones. So that's kind of frightening for me. So,
and it shouldn't happen. That should never happen.
I can make this joke before I go. I'll have to take a pill and I'm out of here, man. Give thanks. I'll listen.
All right. Thank you as always for your calls. So, yeah, there's so many ways we can, there are urine tests. And there are urine tests that I use all the time. The new and developing urine tests for detecting prostate cancer and determining more aggressive types of prostate cancer with more accuracy than even the PSA blood test. So you can provide a urine test, and they're such as the MPS2, the My Prostate Score 2.0, which is a urine test that analyzes 18 different genes associated with high-grade prostate cancer. There's the PSA3 that's been around 25 years. That is used detects the PSA3 marker, which is a non-coding RNA that is overexpressed in the prostate of men with prostate cancer. There's the ExoDX.
How practical are those things in our setting?
If you have insurance, it means yes.
Well, I'm talking about a regular fellow. I'm talking about
there are a lot of regular fellows, right? Who are police officers, immigration officers, teachers. They have insurance.
There are more people without insurance than there are with.
I agree. So, but I'm talking about what is available, what is the advances, what ultimately can we provide our public if we put the amount of money we put into healthcare, if we were to listen to people who are the foot soldiers and put that money into what can save lives, we have enough money.
No, I always believe that there's sufficient monies in healthcare in general. The healthcare industry in the Bahamas, I think, is a $1 billion industry. I've heard that being quoted before. But a lot of that money is spent in South Florida, right? for us to get those things, right, you have to think about someone has to be able to bring that in. And we and those who can afford it need to be able to purchase that hair locally. But nobody has a problem with getting that in South Florida.
Yeah.
But what about locally? So if you don't...
We have another call coming.
All right, go.
Good evening, this urologist speaks.
Golly, they just came along with you and your co-host, Doc.
Thank you. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. What I want to say, right, I've been listening to you for a long time, and I appreciate your intelligence. Of course, my name is Brayman Darling Ferguson, and I would like to say to you, you were, according to my observation from by you, you it seems to me you were born to be a doctor, and I very much appreciate you.
Well, I thank you for your kind words, and it is a calling, and what we do, we're doing through God. My maternal grandfather taught me that, so we're trying to be shepherds. We're trying to be shepherds, and we're trying to save the flock.
You're doing well, man.
I appreciate that.
Continue on the journey.
Well, I'll even put it out that what I'm achieving happens because of mentors, and one of my mentors is sitting across from me, Dr. Wesley Francis. So I thank him as well.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it also, but I thought you were. I never knew that, in other words. But what I want to say is, Riley, your brethren, do well, and have the Princess Margaret Hospital. That's a beautiful hospital, and it was there for a long time, okay? And, you know, I know of it, and people that had worked there, you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And it's carrying a lot of weight. You know, so...
I will say that a lot of the weight is trauma. The unrelenting trauma. Every other day we're having two people shot, three people shot. There's only so much in the way of ICU beds. Yeah, there's so much in the way of operating theater time. There's only so much in the way of blood products available. We need to stop the onslaught of violence.
And it's so sad.
It is.
I don't understand it. I mean... Only the Lord in heaven could help us, and I pray that he does. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you for your call. Yeah, so we're talking about advances. A lot of fear is that we're doomed to have prostate cancer. You even look within your family, we're as if we're hardwired to get prostate cancer. But with almost every cancer, obviously there are some genetic issues. BRCA gene, and we're not talking just BRCA gene. Everybody has BRCA gene, men and women, boys and girls, babies. It's the mutation, the type 1 and type 2 mutation. BRCA gene is a suppressor gene. It stops you from getting cancer. So when the DNA stranding and replication goes awry, it's supposed to correct it before you have undivided cell division and leads to cancer. But when you have the mutation, it allows this cell division and accumulate and lead to cancer. But most cancers, over 90 to 95% of cancers, are related to somatic alterations in our DNA, which are environmental. It's related to things that we do or do not do. So we look at modifiable risk factors. So the good news with that, the positive things with that, is how we live our life can ultimately, with almost certainty, determine whether we're going to have cancer of this type or that type, and that includes prostate cancer. So we're not as predestined to get cancer as many people think. Obviously, there is some genetic predisposition. There is a familial component. But the vast majority of cancers are related to modifiable things that we can change. We can be the right weight. We can exercise. We can avoid charred meats and red meats and processed food. We can increase our fiber intake. We can have more white meat. We can have less, smaller portions. We can avoid cigarette smoking and cigar smoking. We can avoid environmental pollutions. We can avoid sexually transmitted diseases. Even diabetes, uncontrolled diabetes and metabolic syndrome can increase your risk of getting a more aggressive form of prostate cancer. It can make prostate cancer more difficult to treat and increase your risk of recurrence of prostate cancer because of the insulin resistance throughout the body. And prostate cancer is very hormonal sensitive. We can reduce our dairy milk intake because of the estrogens and IGF-1 factor related to in most dairy milk. So there are so many things that we can do to significantly reduce our chance of getting prostate cancer. I always say this, and a lot of people think I'm joking, but the science is there, the studies are there, it's well accepted by every urologist in the world. If you can, there was a landmark study done by Harvard involving over 27,000 men over a long period of time, over almost 20 years. They found that 21 ejaculations a month can significantly reduce your chance of getting prostate cancer as much as 28% to 30%.
So every man just turned the radio up just now, right?
21 ejaculations a month versus those who have 4 to 7 ejaculations a month. So clear the tubes.
And every woman just rolled their eyes just now.
It can save your life. So I'll say again, 21 ejaculations a month, according to a well-respected long-term Harvard study, has shown that 21 ejaculations a month can significantly reduce your chance of getting prostate cancer by 25 to 30%. The same study was replicated in Australia and found exactly the same results. 21 ejaculations is what we're aiming for Bahamian men in residence. And I'll write a prescription for that. We have another call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Yes, thank you. Why did you put me in a spot like that?
And I'm not, a lot of people say when I leave this place, they'll say tomorrow, I'm advocating sweethearts. No, I'm not.
I'm gonna take it off from where you left it off right there.
Okay.
Now,
okay.
21. Now, where does nocturnal emission come into play to help the count, to get that count?
Ejaculations by any means necessary. It doesn't matter. It's the process of ejaculation. It doesn't matter. Whatever way you do it, count that.
So palm marks also?
Anything. I said any means necessary.
Okay.
If you want Dr. Wesley Francis to list all the means, that's okay. Fine. But I think we know.
That's okay. The cost of the MRI machine.
It's not that expensive. There's so many variables because it's determined by... There are even refurbished machines that can be purchased very easily. But there's a 1.5 Tesla. There's a 3 Tesla. Obviously, 3 Tesla is a lot more expensive. That's available at Doctor's Hospital. There are 5 MRIs available privately.
A new MRI.
Maybe a million, 1.5?
Probably 800 to 1.5. Somewhere in that range.
Right. So it's not exorbitant, and it can save lives. If you came in and had a stroke, an MRI can save your life.
Yeah, I think the Bahamas is worthy of it, deserves it, so I'm hoping.
And if you look in the public system in Jamaica, if you look in Barbados, if you look in Trinidad, they have MRIs. So what are we doing?
Right. And they also have two hospitals, too.
Yes, exactly that. And per capita, they don't spend nearly as much money as we do on healthcare. Yes.
Correct. Now, what about the emptying of the bladder? How does that affect the prostate situation? Must the bladder be empty? How can you assist the bladder to get empty?
Well, we also have to determine the reason for that. And there can be obstructive causes. It can be non-obstructive causes. It can be obstructive causes related to your prostate, which could either be benign or malignant. There could be obstructive causes related to your urethra, which could also be benign in terms of scar tissue or stricture. It can be related to, not very common, a urethral tumor. There can be extrinsic compression from within the pelvis itself that can lead to... you not emptying your bladder. So there could be neurological issues related to the nerve supply that allow your bladder to contract or you having proper bladder filling sensation. There's a condition called diabetic cystopathy where the nerves that sense your bladder being full and the nerves that allow you to have your bladder contract to empty your bladder are impaired by uncontrolled or poorly controlled diabetes. That's a huge problem in this country as well. Lower back issues, the nerves come from your lumbar sacral spine. If those are impaired or impinged upon, that can affect you and even put you in retention. So there are many reasons that you're not emptying your bladder. And just because you're peeing frequently doesn't necessarily mean you're not emptying your bladder. It can be because you're consuming too much in the way of liquids. It can be that your diabetes is out of control. It can be that as you get older, there's a hormone produced by the kidney called vasopressin that's supposed to reduce the amount of urine produced by the kidneys throughout the night so you have a better night's sleep. That becomes less and less supply as you get older. So there are innumerable reasons, and in many cases, more than one reason why you might be peeing frequently or urgently. But if you are being determined to not emptying your bladder by an ultrasound or imaging or on clinical exam, then we need to ascertain why, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's related to prostate cancer. In fact, statistically speaking, it's more related to benign disease. But then you also have to remember that even if you are in the age group where you have likely obstructive prostate, you can still have a urethral stricture. You can still have a neurological disorder. You can still have multiple sclerosis. You can still have diabetes that can affect you emptying your bladder. So it's not a simple answer.
I must say I appreciate the conversation, the way the protagonist and the antagonist approach, so to speak, someone representing the average Joe, so to speak, and so on and so forth. It's been very too professional, but yet you bring it down to the small man, the ordinary person.
I appreciate it. I very much appreciate it.
Ordinary in the sense of those who are not necessarily medically inclined. You know?
Yeah, and resources, right.
Now, how easy is this to have for the public to have this NHI? And finally, if you're having a painful ejaculation, how could you get around it to get to 21?
Well, you shouldn't be having painful ejaculations because that can affect your whole psyche. That can affect your marital life, your relationship. So a painful ejaculation for many reasons. The most common reason is because you have prostatitis, either infection or inflammation of the prostate, where even 20-year-olds, 18-year-olds, 16-year-olds, they dread ejaculating because the pain is so severe, and you can have pain anywhere within the pelvis, particularly when you have chronic prostatitis. They call it a chronic pain syndrome. So you can have pain in your perineum, which is where your prostate is located, which is the area above your anus and below your scrotum. You can have pain in either both or one testicle. You can have pain in your urethra. You can have pain in the shaft of the penis. You can have pain in either side of the groin. You can have pain in the lower part of the abdomen, in the bladder itself. So you can have pain anywhere. And that can be debilitating and really have a terrible effect on a man's psyche. So if that happens, or if you see blood in your ejaculate, please seek help, because we can solve the problem. We first, with anything in medicine, anything in urology, determine the root cause and treat the root cause.
I noticed you didn't mention pain in the leg. Is pain in the leg included too?
It rarely radiates down there, but it is possible. It can even radiate to your lower back as well.
Okie dokie. Thank you very much.
Not a problem.
So this is the balance of the month, and we only have a few more minutes. And I know you wanted to get to the future of managing prostate, from screening to treatment.
Yeah.
So why don't we talk about that? Now, I know we talk about in the under-resourced setting, but let's talk about when all the resources are available, insurance, everything is available. What is the future?
Okay, so the take-home message, you don't need surgery to cure prostate cancer. Obviously, okay. There's the disease factors, there's patient factors, there's just in terms of access. If you live in Long Island and you don't have any family in Nassau and you want external beam radiation, that may take 6-7 weeks, it's not the most convenient thing for you to choose external beam radiation. So you might choose a different modality. Soon we're rolling out brachytherapy, which I think is going to revolutionize the treatment of prostate cancer, because that's internal radiation where we put low-dose radioactive seeds strategically in the prostate. So we do a 3D reconstruction of the prostate using advanced algorithms and computer software, make use of a radiation oncologist, a urologist, and actually a nuclear scientist, where we pinpoint and put these little tiny little seeds that disperse radiation a few millimeters in either direction that can destroy the prostate cancer, leaves the rest of the gland intact. You keep your erections at a 90-something percent rate. Urinary issues are basically unheard of. You can do that in a 40-minute outpatient procedure under sedation. You don't even remember anything happened. You can do that on a Saturday, be at church on a Sunday, be at work on a Monday, and your prostate cancer, and studies have shown, is cured at the same rate and rate of excellence as even using the Da Vinci robotic prostatectomy. So that's going to change everything, that you know that, you know what? I can keep my erections. I'm not going to be leaking urine. I don't need any catheter. I can be cured No one even needs to know my business. I can go in and do it, be in and out in 40 minutes with no recovery. I can go to the food store later that evening, and my prostate cancer is something in my rearview mirror that I've overcome.
So brachytherapy, that's you, what you think. Low-dose brachytherapy.
And that's another way we are advocating getting a diagnosis early, because you have so many different treatment modalities available.
When it's local.
Yeah, we can do focal therapy. We can do cryotherapy. We can freeze the prostate cancer. Right. We can do HIFU, high-intensity focus ultrasound, to heat and destroy the cancer. We have another call coming in. This urologist speaks. Good evening.
Good night, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
We're very well, thank you.
Awesome. I was just wondering, particularly if those who test positive, it seems to be a very long process of examination and test. I'm just wondering, after the first hint that you may have prostate, why don't you go straight to the full body MRI and bone? I mean, even for cost. I mean, is there a particular reason why you just don't get straight to the final test that right off the bat?
Because not everybody needs it, first of all. And that not every, I would say 75-80% of prostate cancers are relatively indolent. We need to stratify doing many different things, including liquid biopsies. That's the future. Looking at urine RNA, doing genomic testing. We can do phenogenetic testing where we can determine whether someone has a likelihood of getting prostate cancer at 35. We do the test at 35, whether they're going to get it at 65. So that is the future. Basically stratifying people based on their genes, based on their history, and determining whether they're likely to get prostate cancer. And not just prostate cancer, because everyone's going to get prostate cancer if they live to be old. Which subset of 15 to 20% of persons who get prostate cancer are going to get an aggressive form that we need to treat urgently and aggressively?
Okay, and would an exam or something of that nature be?
So there are other blood tests that look at certain proteins that are produced in prostate. It's called a 4K score. That gives us a statistical stratification in terms of whether you're likely to have an aggressive form of prostate cancer. There's a phi score as well that's also readily available that can also stratify a patient. So the way of the future of prostate cancer treatment is to determine who has indolent disease that we don't need to do anything at all. We can just actively surveil them. Who has intermediate disease that we just may need to treat, or we don't have to rush and treat, and who has aggressive disease that not only if we cure you, what is the likelihood of it's going to recur in 15 years, 20 years, 25 years? So that's where we do gene testing on the biopsies. That's where we do gene testing if we remove the prostate. That's why we do gene genomic testing even on individuals as well.
What is the affordability of such tests?
What is the cost of not doing it? 100 men dying every year and dying a slow, painful death where some of the medications that we give them to give them an extra 8-9 months of horrible life with poor quality of life cost $10,000 a month. So we don't realize that when we're doing palliative radiation, which is trying to give you a little bit of reprieve from all the pain in your bones from all the cancer spread, might be $30,000. So we look at it, we're spending so much money on the back end, why don't we put it on the front end and save these people going down that road? It's the same money. We just need to redistribute the money.
Give you a better quality of life.
Exactly. Let's put more money on the front end and be more proactive and treat patients when they have early disease to prevent so many men dying. Imagine the cost in our society of 100 men, many of them in their prime, dying. How the cost to their children, their grandchildren, and society.
When you say 100 men, is that for how?
Per year. Per year. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
It can even rival gun violence. Yes. We need to do something about it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, so the future, we're even looking at AI. So we use artificial intelligence now in terms of many ways, in terms of screening, in terms of diagnosis, in terms of creating treatment paradigms and algorithms for patients as well. Artificial intelligence has aided pathologists in trying to be more sensitive and picking up prostate cancer at a more accurate result. It's also very important in determining who is more as a more aggressive form of the disease itself. So AI is also being interplayed in every aspect of prostate cancer as well. So the future is bright. There's so many things that are too. Liquid biopsies are the future. And I think we'll talk a little bit more about that in another day. Yeah. But liquid biopsies can determine so many cancers that you may get in 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, before it becomes of any consequence, before any imaging can pick it up, before any blood test can pick it up. So it's not science fiction. There are FDA-approved liquid biopsies that can say, you do this blood test or even urine test, in 5 years, you're likely to get prostate cancer. And if you get that cancer in 5 years, what is the likelihood of it being aggressive? So take-home message, prostate cancer has 100% survival rate. You don't necessarily need surgery. There's so many minimally invasive ways to do it. You don't need the digital rectal exam for first-line screening. Let's stop 100 men dying unnecessarily in this country from prostate cancer, Bahamas.
Amen.
Have a safe week, and I hope the storm doesn't hit us too hard.
Good
God bless.
Bahamas. Tune in today, whether you are